Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 20th of Tevet. And I'm a little embarrassed, actually, because 2 days ago, you heard me on the 18th of Tevet review a tshuva, a responsible Ben Tzion Abba Shaul, and I said I didn't have time to do Rav Avad Yosef's tshuva in response to him, and then I realized when I opened up the 20th of Tevet that actually his response was dated the 20th of Tevet, and I thought it would be interesting to watch his counter-response. But I'm going to do it relatively briefly, and we'll get to some tshuvot of Rav Cook. But this is from the 20th of Tevet of Tavshin Yud Tet of 1959, and it's a much longer tshuva. Rav Avad Yosef, as well known, was a big bucket. He knew a tremendous amount, and he went in at length to various topics that he found interesting along the way. So that to have read the whole tshuva together would have taken us a long time. And in any case, most of the issues were in fact dealt with by Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shaul. Ben Tzion Abba Shaul. Here I just want to take a couple of the issues that Rav Yosef brings up that I thought weren't really covered enough or as at full clarity as in the original tshuva. They were covered more here. So, Rav Yosef says, first of all, we have a Mishnah in Chulin that says that there are some things that their skin, their hides, their leather is like their flesh, and it includes Or HaAdam, the human skin. So the reason to bring that up is because one of the questions about the cornea was whether it counts as skin or not. And if it counted as skin, maybe it would not be Asur Bahana, maybe not be prohibited to get benefit from it. And if it would be prohibited, then you could use the corneas even of Jews. In the Gemara there, this is from Chulin Kuf Chaf Bet, the Gemara has Ula saying that Dvar Torah or Adam Tahor, that according to Torah law, skin is not susceptible to ritual impurity like a dead body, which would sound like the skin is not the same as the flesh. And Rav Ula says, so why did, it's kind of an upsetting Gemara, Ula says, why did Chazal feel the need to create Tumah, ritual impurity? Because otherwise we'd have to be afraid that people would take the hides of their parents and make rugs or carpets out of them. Now, I'm not sure why rugs or carpets, but the idea that people would take, would embalm, would do things with dead bodies that we think are inappropriate, that's an unfortunate idea, I think, though, an idea that has real teeth to it. So that's the way Ula reads it. Now, the Rambam quotes that in Hilchos Tumat Mate, in the laws of ritual impurity of those who have passed away, that Or Adam Kibisaro, V'im Ibdo Kor Tzorcho, but he actually turned it into full leather. So you took the skin and did whatever, and I'm not saying, the Rambam is not saying one should do this at all. But if somebody were to mistreat a dead body and take off the skin and treat it and turn it into leather, or walk on it such that it is, you know, it is worked well enough that it no longer releases skin, then it's no longer ritually impure. But Chazal said it's still impure even then, so that people wouldn't do that. Because otherwise people, it's a terrible thing in my world to think of such a thing, but unfortunately I can imagine that people would do such a thing and say, oh, you know, real human skin leather. Because if you didn't have the prohibition, you'd say to yourself, well, what's so bad about it? In any case, all of that shows, the Rav Yosef says, that the Rambam Paskin is like a Baye that says that it's derabanan in terms of ritual impurity, that if skin has been turned into leather, it's still ritually impure, but it's ritually impure at a rabbinic level, and that's where the Kesef Mishnah has it as well. But other sources think that it's not true, that it's still prohibited outright, that there's a biblical prohibition to use such skin and to do anything with it. I mean, the implication of if you worked it, it loses its ritual impurity and it becomes not ritually impure. That means, sounds like it means it's no longer considered a dead body. If it's no longer considered a dead body, maybe you'd be allowed to use it. But the Rav Avad Yosef points out there are plenty of sources that say it's not true. So, for example, even in the Rambam, in Hilchos Evel, he says, Hamet Asur Bahana, Kulo Chutz Mise'aro. He says everything other than its hair. So the hair of a dead person, maybe you could use for various reasons or various purposes, but in terms of the skin, it sounds like the skin is still prohibited and Min HaTorah. There is a Rashba that sounds like the skin is no worse than the hair, but Rav Avad Yosef, after a long discussion, thinks it's not true, that the thrust of most of the sources is that we think that the skin of a person is in fact different, and it's only when the person turns it into leather, then it can be tahor min haTorah. But in general, the skin is, and then with corneas, we don't do anything to them. We just take them out and put them into new people. So that would make it more like skin that has not yet been worked into leather, and therefore it would seem like the prohibition should be biblical rather than rabbinic, and therefore it should continue a prohibition getting benefit from it. All that would support Rav Ben Tzion Abba-Shaul's conclusion that at least in the case of Jews, we can't use their corneas. Rav Yosef also thinks that the whole idea of prohibiting it derabanan, of creating a tumma derabanan, lest we use it, shows that we're not supposed to be using it at a Torah level. Otherwise, there would be no reason for Chazal, meaning Rav Yosef is assuming that Chazal don't just make up prohibition because they're offended by an idea. They make up the prohibition because they think it's attached to a Torah idea. It's an extension of a Torah idea. So the Torah idea would seem to be that at a Torah level, we're not supposed to be using it. That's the way he suggested for these purposes. Then he suggests that all might be true. He quotes a shut tuf tam vadat in the early edition, meaning the first edition, meaning there were more tshuva, not like he changed his mind later. It was just the first group of tshuvot that he published. He suggested that maybe when we say it's prohibited to get any benefit from a corpse, from a person who's passed away, maybe that's only until it's been buried. But if a corpse, however it was, is disinterred after the first burial, so the mitzvah has already happened, it's been buried, and that's what's supposed to happen. And maybe if it's been taken out of it, even though the Tuf Tam Vadat thinks there is an obligation to rebury, so there's a mitzvah to be reburied, to rebury the person who has been disinterred, but the mitzvah has been done, and therefore there wouldn't be a prohibition to get hana'ah, to get benefit from the corpse. That's the way he suggested. But the Note of Yehuda said that it's not true, that there's not, when we talk about things that have to be buried, it's not that there's an obligation to bury them. It's that we have to make sure not to get hana'ah from them in any way. And that would be true, for example, it's about a nafel. So a nafel is a baby that's born prematurely or a baby that's born but then passes away within the first 30 days. And we assume that must mean that it was actually premature. And in that case, there's no obvious reason to bury it because it's not actually considered a full person. So the answer is we bury it because we don't want people to mistakenly get benefit from it. That's true of a nafel. With other people who have passed away, the kavura is because of bizayon. Kavura is because of it's derogatory. It's a denigration of the human spirit, basically. It's a bizayon to have bodies lying around, and that has nothing to do with nasei mitzvot. Meaning, if the body gets disinterred, that same bizayon comes into place. Rav Yosef, in other words, is saying you have a suggestion in Achronim that maybe the reason to bury people is there's an obligation to bury people, ki kavortik berenu, as Rav Ben Tzion Abba-Shaul spoke about, and then once that mitzvah was performed, maybe after that, you would be able to like, get benefit from it. From comes along, Nodi Ridin says, there's maybe it may or may not be mitzvah to bury, but there's also the idea of bizayon with people. In the case of bizayon with people, that can go away just because the body has been buried one time. Rav Yosef points out there's another Gemara in Sanhedrin, Memvav Amid Bet, that talks about whether burial is supposed to be for bizayon, because we have to get rid of this. We can't have bodies lying around. It's embarrassing, I think, to humanity, or it's embarrassing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's wrong. It mistreats the human body to leave it lying around. Or it's because of kapara. Kapara is that the person gets atonement by the pain of burial. There's a whole discussion about the fact that the soul still is connected to the body and while it's being buried, therefore suffers for it, and that provides atonement. And one nafkamina in the Gemara, the nafkamina was the reason, the distinction between the two reasons would be, let's say the person who's about to pass away says, I don't want to be buried, don't bother burying me, for whatever reason. So if the reason for burial is bizayon, it's not that person's right to say, well, you all should bear the bizayon, you should bear the disgrace of having a body lying around. But if it's for kapara, you could have imagined it. So Rav Yosef says, so if that's according to the Note of Yehuda saying now, you might also have said that it's a nafkamina, that another distinction between the two reasons for burying would be in terms of if a body accidentally or for whatever reason got disinterred. If the whole point was kapara, was the atonement, once that's done, it's done, like the Tuv Tam Vadad said. But if it's because of bizayon, then you'd have to bury it again because it's not in our right to leave a body unburied. And Rav Yosef points out, we in fact paskin in halacha that it's a bizayon issue. It's a question of disgrace to humanity or to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor to have bodies lying around. And he goes on and he proves that at great length. And that would mean, therefore, that you also couldn't imagine, we wouldn't accept the idea of the Tuf Tam Vadat, that even if the body got disinterred, that we could get a benefit from it. So that's where it is. So that all, again, seems to point to agreement with Rav Ben Sion Abba Shaul that we can't do cornea transplants, at least from Jews, because of this prohibition of getting benefit from the people who had passed away. So, the only opening left for a Vayusef now is, and again, as I said before, and 2 days ago, he actually is going to come to the opposite conclusion from Ben Sion Abba Shaul, and the only way out now is to talk about the issue of Shaloka Derech Hana'atat, which Ben Sion Abba Shaul spoke about a little bit, but he's going to speak about it more, and I'm going to skip a lot of what he spoke about. He says, since we think that, as we spoke about 2 days ago, since we think we learn the prohibition of getting hana'a benefit from a corpse is learned from the prohibition of getting it from avodah zarah, from idolatry, then there's a question when it comes to idolatry itself as to whether or not you can get benefit if it's shelo kederech hana'atan, not in the way that was originally intended. There's a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah that also that talks about, let's say you break it up and you grind it into dust, you throw it to the wind, or you throw it into the sea. That was the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, that that's good enough in terms of Avodah Zarah, in terms of getting rid of idolatry. That's what you can do with it. You don't have to go further in making sure to get rid of it. And they said to him, that's not acceptable because then it can become a zevel, become manure of a sort. You can use it to treat the ground, and even in that state. And it says in the Torah, lo yidbak biyadcha meuma min hacherim, that you can't leave any of the cherim, meaning the avodah zarah, the idolatry, that you're not allowed to have any ownership of any of it. You can't have any of it stick with you. And they seem to be holding that even this zevel, this it's not really manure, but it's like acting sort of like fertilizer, being thrown through on the ground in some way and having some function, seems to be a problem. And the Tosafot there say, even though it's true that in the case of Pesach, we do say mifarei v'zorei l'ruach, that you can, we, most of us in our practice, burn our chametz, but there is an opinion that the opinion of Chachamim in the case of Pesach, of chametz, of leaven before Pesach, seems to be that if you crumble it up and throw it to the wind, so that should also be a problem. So why don't we say there, that's not good enough because it becomes manure. So Rav Yosef says that I can answer that there it's different because the Torah says lo yochal, you're not allowed to eat it, and the prohibition of getting benefit is an extension of the eating, and that might be therefore why we would say that it's only prohibited kederech hana'ato, in the way that it usually gets the benefit. Meaning, there's two ways I can say something is prohibited to get benefit from. It could be inherently prohibited to get benefit from, or it could be that the Torah says don't eat it, and when the Torah says don't eat something, we have a general halachic principle that don't eat it includes not getting hana'a, includes not getting benefit. The other option, which is less halachically interesting, is to say that the opinion that there says you can break it up and throw it to the wind is the opinion of Rabbi Yossi here, but that would be a problem, I think, for our practices. We think that halakhically you're allowed to do it here, and I don't think we think we're allowed to do it in the case of idolatry. In any case, Rabbi Yosef says it'll turn out to be, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, you have two opinions about whether it's prohibited also, shelo kederech hana'ato, that it's also prohibited not in the way you're used to getting benefit from it. So for example, in terms of the crumbling it up and throwing it places, that would be shelo kederech hana'ato. Is that allowed or not? And that would be a question of the two opinions in the Tosfos here. Okay. According to that, then you could say there is an opinion that says shelo kederech hana'ato is usher to oraita, is prohibited at a Torah level. And the opinion that says that maybe chametz would be the same thing, according to that opinion, they would say that it's true of other prohibitions as well that are like chametz, and it'd be like chatzi shir, and there'd be a Torah prohibition. It goes on to the whole thing, and that would then suggest that it should be true of the prohibition of getting benefit from corpses from those who have passed away, since it's derived from. Avodah Zarah, from idolatry. And then you have that problem. So, Ravisa goes on for a while, but I'm skipping a lot of it. He says, but what you see from all of here is, there are many who hold that, so I skip the other part where he says, no, but there are many who hold the other way. So he says, there are many who hold that even Avodah Zarah, shelo kederech hana'ato, is mutar min ha-Torah, is allowed min ha-Torah. And that's, he thinks, the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, and that's the opinion he thinks of the Rambam, where the Rambam writes, in Hilchot Ma'achalot Asurot Kol Ha'ochlim Ha'asurim, every food that is prohibited derech hana'atan, is prohibited other than basar b'chalav, meat and milk, and kileh hakerem, because if you grow different species together in an orchard, so you in a like a vineyard. Yeah, if you like. So you've put together wine and wheat and some other thing together. That would be kibbeh kerem. So there the Torah didn't use the word achila. And therefore, we think that the hana that's prohibited, the benefit that's prohibited, is prohibited even shalokidir hanatan. But everything else will be permitted. So when it comes to tikrovet avodah zarah, it doesn't say that. So it sounds like avodah zarah is like other isurim, other prohibitions, meaning it said other than basar b'chalav, meat and milk, and kibbeh kerem, but didn't say food that has been sacrificed to an avodah zarah. So that sounds like food that has been sacrificed to an avodah zarah, which is prohibited to get benefit from, that's only kederach hana'atan. So that would mean that since we derive, following right now the view that we derive the prohibition of getting benefit from a corpse, including corneas, from avodah zarah, so that would mean that shalokidir hanatan should be okay, and that would be another reason to be allow the transplants. Then, after all of this long discussion, he says, and all of that was only according to the view that we derive the prohibition of getting benefit from a person who has passed away from avodah zarah. But if we get it from egla arufa, as we discussed last time, right? It says the gezeira shava of sham matamot sham miriam passed away there, and they would arfut agla banachal there. So, and there's kapar there. If that's true, then it gets into a whole different discussion in the Rishonim as to whether there's mi'ilah when a case of mi'ilah, because egla arufa is a problem of mi'ilah, of getting benefit from that which has been used for a kodesh purpose, for a sanctified purpose. So that would be a whole another machlok Rishonim as to whether or not that includes shalok derech hana'atan. One good option is the Tosfos Psachim that says that we get the whole idea of mi'ilah from truma, of what kind of hana'ah, what kind of benefit it allowed, from another gzeresh of chait in the case of truma. And in the case of truma, it talks about eating, which would mean that if it's not derech hana'atan, it should be okay. And he goes on in that vein. So fundamentally, what Rav Yosef does is he goes through a tremendous numbers of debates among the Achronim. He points out that since there are many achronim, already cited, he says, "Harbe achronim shomdim b'shitat Radbaz lahatir shloka derech hanatan b'meh," to follow the opinion of the Radbaz, which Rav Ben Tzion Avishol mentioned, but he sort of said it's just the Radbaz and the Mishnah Lamelech. So Rav Yosef is saying, "No, I can find you many, many achronim who agree that when it comes to a person who's passed away, the prohibition of getting benefit is only derech hanatan." Now, as I said on the last time, I'm not sure why it's clear to them that taking a cornea out of a person who's passed away and putting it into a new person isn't derech hana'atan, isn't the way one gets benefit from the cornea. It seems like he thinks it's only if one would use that dead body for food or something like that, which is I don't quite understand it. In any case, because of all of this, Rav Yosef concludes that we can say, remember, Ben Tzion Avishol had said that when it comes to non-Jews, you can use it, but with Jews, he thinks these prohibitions get in the way. Rav Yosef's fundamental position is, after showing many reasons to think that Ben Tzion Avishol was right, as we've already reviewed, is that the issue of shalok derech hanatan, that you're not getting the benefit in the way that this benefit is usually taken, would mean that it's allowed, especially since this kind of operation will open the eyes of the blind, so he thinks you can allow this even using a non-Jewish corpse. So that is the debate that you had between Rabbi Yosef and Mitzvah Abba Shaul about the question of corneal transplants. You have the two sides that we've seen, and I thought it was interesting to see both sides. So that is a responsible day for the 20th of Tevet, but I don't want to leave you too early today. I know there are days that I take a minute extra, 2 minutes extra. I think I may have once gone 5 minutes over, but I really feel like you'd walk away today. Now, some people listening would walk away today and say, "Oh, 18 minutes, nice. I got an extra 12 minutes in life." But I hope that some of you would feel cheated if I stopped now. So I want to do two quick tshuva, two quick responsa of Rav Kook that I also thought were kind of interesting, make us aware of the kinds of halakhic issues we sometimes don't keep enough track of. And they were also written in the 20th of Tevet. So for the 20th of Tevet of Tuf Resh Pei Vav, which was January of 1926, Rav Yosef has a short tshuva. This is in Da'at Kohen, in Siman Reish Lamed Dalet, in response number 234, where he's asked a couple of questions about kilayim, about, like we just mentioned before, about kilayim, about when you are and aren't, and how you do and don't mix species in planting, and then about trumos and maisos, and about shvit, and about shmita questions. So in terms of planting, the prohibition of kilayim, the fundamental prohibition would be actually to plant them literally together in the same planting issue, meaning dropping the seed into the same hole in the ground. But if you look at Masechet Kilayim in the Mishnayot, and in the Gemara, the Mishnah, and the Yerushalmi talk about, and the Halacha talk about, that you need to put a separation among species, among types of plants, because you want to make sure that everybody knows that you're not planting them together. So Rav Yosef says, Rav Kook says, Rav Kook says, if you have a tefach umechza between each type of plant, each type of vegetable, this is about Yerakot he's talking about, you have room to be somit. There are opinions that say that's enough. So a tefach umechza, let's remember, a tefach is about 4 inches, different opinions about different things. So Mechza would be about 6 inches. He says, if you, how long you have a space of about 6 inches, half a foot between them, that would be okay. But with other plants, that would be true of vegetables. But with the Zra'im, so I think vegetables are that which grow above. I'm not sure exactly what the distinction he's trying to Yerakot and Zra'im. It might be that Yerakot grow above the ground and Zra'im grow within the ground and then pop up out of the ground, or the other way around. But Zra'im she'in zor'im ba'aruga, like kidneys. It's like legumes. You don't grow them in a square of their own, I think. So there, if you grow them in rows, I think is what he means. So then you need to make sure that there's a separation. You have a telem, a row of at least a length of 6 tvachim at the head of each row. So meaning, if you're going to grow it, I think the answer is that some things you grow in small little boxes of their own, and then if you have a tefach umechza between the boxes, you're okay. But you're going to grow them in long rows, so then at the end of the row, you need a counter row that runs at least 6 tvachim, or at least 2 feet at the head of each row, and that should be lined, he thinks, with dirt, and the width of that dirt thing that you have should be as wide as the depth of it. And if it's possible, then it should be an ama, that should be a full ama wide, so an ama is 18 to 24 inches, then that would be even better. And then you can put another plant, then you could plant something between, put another thing, whether it's vegetables or Zra'im or legumes and things like that, as long as they're not in the same mapolet yad, they're planting the same thing, then you can plant one after the other, and then you're going to be okay as long as you have these harchakot, as long as you have this distinction. So that's some advice about how to plant and how to separate the plants so that you don't have a problem with kilai. When it comes to trumos and maestros, he says, so you want to eat stuff without having taken a full truma and maestro, what do you do? So what he suggests is, and I think people still do something like this in Eretz Yisrael, he says that although a lot of the fruit and vegetables are now tithed in some way in the necessary ways before they come to market, but if you get stuff that hasn't yet been tithed, and you have to take care of it. He says, "Re'oi she'imuchan etzel etzel Torato, kvo Torato." This rabbi, he should have, or some appointee of the community should have, fruits and vegetables of sort of all varieties that are being grown in enough of a shear, in enough of an amount that you could have trumas maaser and truma gedola. So truma gedola, let's remember, the things that you tithe, you have to take truma gedola is any amount. So in the time when you're actually giving it to a kohen, you're supposed to give somewhere between 1.5% and 2.5% of it to a kohen. But in our times, we're not going to give it to a kohen anyway, so any amount works. Because truma gedola is even... The halacha is chita achat poteret la keri. You could have one stalk of wheat would be enough truma for a whole big harvest of truma, if you were absolutely using the minimum. But trumat maser is a tenth of a tenth, is 1%, because a trumat maser is the tenth goes to a levi, and then a tenth of that goes to a kohen. So those two things, regular Jews are not allowed to eat at all. So you have to get those out of the harvest, no matter what, even if we're not giving it to anybody. The maaser, the stuff that goes to a levy, so that's redeemable. So theoretically, so if a regular Jew eats it and would pay the levy back for it, that would be fine. It's, we don't know who the levium are, and this, so you don't have to actually give it today. So those parts are going to be okay. So this is what he says you have to do. You have to make sure you have tivalim. You have stuff that hasn't been tithed yet that you keep of all these species, and it should be a little more than 1%. Why should it be a little more than 1%? Because the 1% is eventually going to be the trumas maaser that would have gone to a kohen by way of the levi, and the little bit more could be the truma, even if it's just a little bit more. And then he'll say that whoever has any of these species, so every morning he can say this, or as long as people are getting stuff, you could say, I think every day, every morning he said you should say this, that whatever they have, that's whatever's here, that's more than 1 in 100, that's going to be the truma. For all the things that are going to be a problem taking truma and maaser from, for whatever reason. Some things he says, it's hard to be poded them because they're less than the right amount of money. There's not enough of them even to do any kind of pidyon on the maaser sheni that you should have. So that'll be included in this as well. So we're trying to cover all of our bases here. And then the 1 in 100 that's left will be the trumas maaser. And then, and the way you'll do that is you'll say, in their harvest, whatever they have, I'll name, the northern part will be the maaser, and then this that I have now is the chumat maaser, and that'll work for everything for them. And then you'll name where you think the maaser sheni is going to be, although, like I said before, you'd have to include, if there are people who have maaser sheni is something you're supposed to bring to Yerushalayim and eat it there, so you have to do something with that, so you can be poda that, you can redeem that, and then at some point in time, you're supposed to take that money and go to Yerushalayim and eat it, if you could, but we don't do that today because we don't have a base of Mikdash and none of it works, although you're still supposed to do this redemption. So he had said before, though, that sometimes you can't do that because there's less than a pruta's worth, and if there's less than a pruta's worth, then it's a problem, or it's not in the right place that you can be pulled it. So in any case, you'll name, though, for those that you can, you name the place where you're going to assume is the maaser sheni, and then you redeem it on a pruta that you have. You have like a piece of money, and you take this money, and it's with you for the purpose of redeeming these kinds of things. And you can do that for a while, because we hold that in these situations, you don't have to worry about the actual values, and this will take care of certain kinds of eating that you have. Then he says, of course, there are other kinds of eatings that you could have. He doesn't name them exactly, or if you're going to be selling it, and if you're going to be selling it, then you can't rely on this, and then you have to take truma and maaser and do something with it, and take care of it in those ways. But this is a patent, a way of taking care of it for those who have not the usual abilities to take truma and maaser. In terms of matno kahuna, the halacha originally is that what you're supposed to do is that any Jew who slaughters an animal is required to give parts of that animal to a kohen. So today it's complicated. We don't know who a kohen is, and we're not sure. And so he says that what the butcher should do is lend money at the beginning of a year to a kohen, whatever amount. And it doesn't matter again, the amount doesn't actually matter again, because he thinks you can do it for a lot less than it's really worth. And then over time, you'll deduct from that loan, meaning let's say you give the kohen $100 at the beginning of the year. And over time, as the butcher slaughters animals, and he's theoretically supposed to be giving the zroa l'chayim kiva, the arm and the cheeks and one of the stomachs to a kohen, he can just say, well, I'll deduct it from the amount the kohen owes me, and then the kohen can give the back to the butcher a penny, and that is rent on wherever the animals are left, because in order for the kohen to transfer the value, transfer the items to the guy, meaning the kohen now owes the butcher $100. The butcher says, well, I will take partial payment of my loan in this part of the animals that we have here. So you have to have some active acquisition there to do it. So the kohen can do it by saying, well, wherever they are, that piece of land belongs to me in some way, and I can give it back to you with the things that are upon it. That's called kinyan agaf. So that would be it's a transaction where the acquisition is done by transferring the land, and land can be transferred much more easily and less with less direct contact with the land than movable items can. So the kohen can transfer back the property, the land, and give it like we do this for mechiras chametz, for selling chametz for Pesach. That's part of how we do it. How we get the kohen, how we get the non-Jew to own it. We rent him the place where any chametz is found. So too, the kohen will give some rental money to the butcher, and by renting it, now the land becomes his. Once the land is his, he can then give it back to him with the stuff that's on it, and then the kohen has taken possession of it. So they've done the mitzvah of giving this, but then they deduct it from the loan, and it can work for a whole year. And Rav Cook says, you don't have to worry about the value issues, because in Perek Kol Haget, we see that the value in these situations is not a problem. In terms of Matno Kahuna, you can sell it, the Kohen can sell it, even for much less than it's actually worth. As a postscript to the letter, he says, and when it comes to deciding what counts as a min, as a type of a fruit or a vegetable, it does it like in Kilayim, he said you need to have separations of various sorts. Either you need to have a tefach and a half, or you need to have a whole row of dirt, and the dirt be as wide as it is deep, right? The pile of dirt that's as wide as it's deep. So in terms of deciding what considered separate types, he says, you can't trust, he calls them agronomim. I think he means farmers and the scientists who know about these kinds of issues. Botanists, maybe botanists, because what they call different plants and different types, he says, it's not always true halachically. And it's all the more true the other way. Sometimes they call something the same exact thing or the same type. So let's say we've spoken about, in other occasions, various kinds of wheat. There's durum wheat, there's Turkish wheat, and all those kinds of wheat sound like they might be wheat. It might be that people will call them one mean for certain purposes, whereas halachically, they're different meaning. They're considered kilayim gemur. They're considered full kilayim. So separating what is what and knowing what's the same and what's different, that has to be by going to a posek, by going to a Torah scholar who knows these things and knows the halacha about these things. And if you have to doubt, he says you have to be machmir, not only in terms of dropping it in one mapolet yad, in one handful into the ground, that's a Torah prohibition, but even in terms of when they're not separated far enough, which is a rabbinic version of this, nonetheless, you have to be machmir about it, because we say in general, and this applies not only to agriculturalists, we say in general that a lack of knowledge, when you can find out the answer, that's not considered the kind of thing that you're allowed to just say, well, sfeika d'rabbanan l'kula, that since it's a rabbinic issue, I don't have to, since it's a rabbinic issue, I can be mekil, I can go leniently. The answer is if it's a matter of lack of knowledge, and if I just learned a little bit more, went to a rabbi and asked them the question, then I have to pass on the chumra, I have to rule stringently, even if it's a rabbinic issue. So that is the closing of the letter, and the of Rav Cook's, and that is a response of a day. First, the closing up of the issue of cornea transplants, we saw Rav Yosef's response, where fundamentally it's an issue who thinks of Shalok Kedir Hanatan, you're not getting the benefit the way that it was. That would be his response to Rav Ben Sira Mashul, that's for the 20th Tevet, and Rav Cook on some agricultural issues, also for the 20th of Tevet. Have a great day.